A top advisor to President Obama is in Bloomington Normal. David Axelrod says President Biden faces a challenge on immigration and thinks in spite of pandemic fatigue among voters, Governor J.B. Pritzker will do okay. Other Democrats in the next election cycle? That's tougher. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. The singer-songwriter group Stone and Snow can't always write about things in the moment.
I have to give it time and process it before I can actually say what I want to say about it.
And writing about it in the moment would have been a lot more angry songs.
The new album is We Were Made for These Times, and the president of the University of Illinois system celebrates a partnership with Illinois State University and the chance to work on the state goal of becoming a hub for EV technology. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The former senior advisor to President Barack Obama is in town tonight. David Axelrod is the keynote speaker at the McLean County Democrats' Legacy Dinner, honoring the leadership of Barack and Michelle Obama. Reporter Sarah Nardi talks with Axelrod before the event, beginning with President Biden's stance on immigration and allegations of a credibility gap. Democratic voters were expecting to see a change from Trump-era policies, but given the state of things on the border, that hasn't happened in any visible sense. Axelrod says that leaves Biden with a challenge.
Well, I think he has a problem. regardless of credibility or any of the political implications, you know, we've continued to have problems at the border. We don't have adequate systems in place to deal with it in a humane way and in an effective way. And that takes probably more time than he anticipated, but it's a problem that he clearly needs to deal with and, at some point will be held accountable for if he doesn't. And I'm sure he knows that.
Do you think he has a coherent message on immigration? Because Trump's message, as distasteful as it was to many people, was a clear message in the very least.
No, I don't. And I don't think, I mean, the fact is that he has been very focused on two things, which is COVID and the economy. And getting us past this virus and passing an economic plan. And they've been very disciplined, so far as events have allowed, in staying focused on those. But the casualty of that is, on issues like this, there hasn't been a really consistent message. And that's something he's going to need to address.
So moving on to that economic plan, you know, the infrastructure battle is unfolding before our eyes. And Biden seems to have really doubled down on fusing these two elements of his domestic agenda, the very traditional roads and bridges aspect of infrastructure, and this more progressive and new idea of social infrastructure. Do you think he risks alienating members of his own party by insisting on keeping these two together?
No, you know, I think ultimately, first of all, he will pass these bills. They're not going to be in the same exact form as originally proposed, but that's the way legislation works. And you can see the process working right now. But I think he'll get almost unanimous support among Democrats for whatever the final product is. And the final product will reflect a consensus. I think most Democrats understand the need for infrastructure in every community is clear. And so all Democrats, I think, agree on that. And I think most Democrats, if not all Democrats, understand that, you know, the economy has changed in dramatic ways that conspire against, you know, everyday working people in ways that the social safety net needs to account for. Education has changed in the world. And so, you know, it makes sense to have pre-K and 2 years after high school of education or training as a part of the regimen, child care. I mean, I think these are issues that the cost of healthcare. These are issues that people feel in their lives. Most Democrats agree on them. The question is what the remedy should be and how you pay for it. And that's, of course, the devil's in the details. And the details are being thrashed out as we speak.
Is that what's making it such a tough sell?
I think we have holdouts for a variety of reasons. Mainly, you know, I think a lot of Democrats see this as the last chance probably to do something really big and historic in terms of the safety net side of things. You know, there may be a Democrat Congress in 2023, but the odds right now is that there won't be. And so people feel like this is the last big chance. It's hard to do these things in an election year. And so they're fighting to get their priorities into this bill. And their priorities are not parochial priorities. They're, you know, I mean, they go to climate change. They go, which is obviously a huge issue. And some of the other priorities that I mentioned. And they're all fighting and using their leverage to try and make sure their priorities are in the bill. You know, Joe Manchin, if nothing else, he's taught every member of Congress that they have leverage when the Congress is divided as it is now. Every senator has leverage. Every member of the House, really, in a House where only you have an effective margin of three right now, every member feels empowered to try and fight for their priorities. And that's made for a messy process, but that's the nature of democracy and the nature of legislating. It's foolish to think in this big, diverse country that you're going to have people representing different areas of the country who have the same exact priorities or approach.
Do you think people like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, who might come from less progressive districts, have a tougher sell to their constituents when we're talking about things that typically fall into the category of social infrastructure?
Yeah, and I think the longer that, one of the mistakes I think, and it may have been by necessity because other events intruded, but it would have been good to spend the summer sort of spelling out what exactly is in that bill, because when you don't do that, it becomes a fight over price tag, and it becomes a fight over what people imagine is in that bill. Most of what's in that bill is not the creation of anything new, but the expansion of things that have existed before. But at the end of the day, I will say this, if they don't do anything, if they actually were in stalemate and couldn't get anything done, they will lose and they'll deserve to lose because people will rightly say, well, you had the majority and you proposed all these ambitious things and you didn't get them done.
And if I can ask you just finally, in regards to Illinois politics, what do you think of J.B. Pritzker's chances going into the gubernatorial election, given that, for better or worse, he's become so emblematic of the pandemic for Illinois voters, kind of a repository for all their frustrations and anxieties about COVID in general?
Well, first of all, we have to see where the pandemic is by the time people vote. But, you know, my read of it is that, you know, he's been pretty courageous on this issue, understanding that there was political risk, trying to follow the science. And that enrages some people. And there's no doubt about it. And one of the sad things about the pandemic is that it's become so politicized. And the easiest thing in the world would have been to say, you know what, I'm not going to impose any restrictions on anyone. I'm not going to ask anything of anyone. But the death toll would have been much higher. The impact on our state would have been much higher. I actually think a majority of people recognize that. I mean, it's interesting, Sarah, you can always tell what people's research is telling them by looking at the advertising they're doing. Pritzker's ads, which are up quite early, are all about the pandemic and his leadership in the pandemic. That tells me that he believes and that the people, his strategists believe, and the research that he's seen suggests that on balance, his leadership during the pandemic is a plus and not a minus.
That's David Axelrod, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, who's speaking tonight at the McLean County Democrats' Legacy Dinner. He spoke with Sarah Nardi.
I'm Dolly Parton. I want every child to learn to read and have books in their home. Learning how to read and knowing what's going on in the world are both important. NPR removes barriers to good information so you can learn whenever and however you choose to listen. And it's only possible because people like you choose to support it. Please make a donation now.
Keep WGLT community powered with a gift at WGLT.org.
Whether you're looking to get out and about or want to promote your organization's upcoming event, WGLT's community calendar should be your first stop. You can learn a hobby, support your favorite cause at a fundraiser, or catch a performance featuring local talent. Check out WGLT's online community calendar or submit your own events at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The president of the University of Illinois system is on a statewide tour meeting with legislators and community leaders to discuss ways in which the U of I might help spur innovation. In this conversation with Sarah Nardi, Tim Killeen says the state holds a lot of promise when it comes to opportunities in electric vehicle technology, especially given Rivian's recent ramp up into commercial production.
We see it as very exciting developments and something that's really got long-lasting legs to get into the electric vehicle mode so assertively with Rivian's arrival. And we think we can play a very important supportive role with digital abilities and smart systems and the logistics, the transportation, all of the things that go into sort of making society function more optimally and also with lesser impact on the environment, which is all going to be incredibly important as we move forward. So this is an exciting development, and we're going to contribute importantly, you know, particularly through this partnership with ISU that goes back many, many decades.
Right. And can you tell me a bit more about that? Are these the innovation hubs that you've partnered with throughout the state?
Yes. We've been working together on a concept to sort of raise the whole tax base across the state through innovation. And it's going to be a network system. We call it the Illinois Innovation Network. It's going to have 15 hubs, and each hub is going to be in a region and specifically tailored to that region's needs and expertise and possibilities, but all connected with advanced cyber infrastructure and with a big facility in Chicago as well. It'll be close to the business capital of the state, and we're excited about that. Every public university is involved. Private universities are involved, University of Chicago, Northwestern, Illinois Institute of Technology, but also international partners. So we're very excited to sort of have Illinois as a whole basically raise its game in an innovation ecosystem that will create prosperity, jobs for our graduating students, and leave nobody behind. So we want to pioneer kind of a new grounded model of innovation.
Heartland, which is a community college located here in town, is really meeting Rivian where it's at in terms of workforce demand by building up two-year programs to train those workers who won't necessarily need four-year degrees to work there. Does U of I have any role to play in those two-year educational programs?
We see the whole educational spectrum as, you know, from K through lifelong learning, and each component is really important. In fact, the educational pipeline, if you call it that, is as weak as its weakest elements. So the two-year opportunities are incredibly important for particular job categories going to open up in the next decades. Credentials of different types. Obviously, the four-year degree is not going to go away, and that's critically important as well. There are some clear signs that we're seeing both at ISU and at U of I system of demand-side growth. We're seeing more students wanting to come and get access to a world-class affordable education. And these transition points have to be optimized so that people don't get lost in the cracks or unable to, you know, navigate a transition effectively. And of course, the financial circumstances also come into play. So we and ISU collectively argue for strong support for a public higher education. But we need to take the big picture so that college readiness is a key factor of it. Inclusive access so that, you know, communities don't feel left out or behind. There have to be some transitional systems so that if there's remedial need, there's remedial opportunities.
That's Tim Killeen, president of the University of Illinois system. He says the university will expand on a longstanding relationship with ISU to help develop economic opportunities around EV technology. Killeen spoke with Sarah Nardi.
Thanks for choosing the Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm Eric Stock with Madeline Jean Charles for the Fall Fund Drive. If you've already contributed during this fund drive, thank you. And if not, you can make a contribution right now at WGLT.org.
Local news matters. The WGLT newsroom makes choices every day about what we cover and what we don't. Oftentimes, the newsroom makes those decisions based on resources. Do we have enough reporters to cover the events, community meetings, rallies, or even school boards?
Financial contributions make those decisions easier by helping to fund our growing team of reporters, part-time correspondents, and student journalists. Together, those contributions allow WGLT to deliver you all the news you need to make decisions for yourself, your family, and your community.
Show us local news matters to you today. Support community-focused and community-powered media with a contribution now at WGLT.org.
And you should know that when we say local news, we mean super local. The WGLT Newsroom is on the campus of Illinois State University. Our team lives here, and we are invested in this community. This community investment is reflected in the news we cover and the stories we tell.
We are able to remain locally focused and independent in our news coverage because of people like you who contribute. Your financial support during the fall fund drive tells us you care about having your favorite NPR programs on air, a local newsroom, and shows like Sound Ideas. Donate now to fund it at WGLT.org.
WGLT's local news from around town and NPR news from around the world is here for you Monday through Sunday. We're guessing that's why you're listening right now, because you count on us for news. And we count on you in return for the individual financial support that pays for the news and programs that power your day. So give now, please, at WGLT.org. And thank you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Bloomington-based singer-songwriter duo Stone and Snow has a new album out. The title track, We Were Made for These Times, is the jumping-off point for the overarching theme of the album. Karen Bridges and Clint Thompson say a lot of the songs were actually written in 2017 and had a long development period.
And then when the pandemic hit, we kind of knew that that song was going to be the song based on what we've all been through.
It sounded like you can take it, the lyrics, in a couple of different ways. One would be powering through, we got this, we were in fact made for these times. And the other one might be, I'm hanging on, and I'm made for these times, and I will make it even though I'm struggling. Can you look at it either way, or how do you look at it?
I totally think that's fair. And actually, the chorus, we actually rewrote in the pandemic. So we were kind of feeling like the original chorus was just a little too, I don't know, it was like more of like, we're in the shadows, we're in the underground, we're grassroots, we're going to get through, you know, more like political times back in 2017. And I just felt like that just wasn't relevant anymore so much. And I guess that's maybe a pitfall of writing about current events, is that things don't always age very well. And so releasing that song now, I just felt like it needed to change. So the chorus is new in a way, the lyrics are new.
Oh, what a time to be alive. We'll keep raving on, they won't break us down. We were made for these times.
In songwriting, there's a tension between the technical side of it and the artistic side of it, the nuts and bolts, and then the flourishes that you put in to really put a stamp on it. How do you strike that balance?
I know a lot of artists spent this pandemic like writing, and I felt a lot of pressure to do that. And I didn't give in to that pressure because I didn't feel like it was really happening. It felt like too much. I can't always write while I'm going through things. I have to give it time and process it before I can actually say what I want to say about it.
And writing about it in the moment could have been a lot more angry songs or a lot of a dark material, which isn't necessarily what we wanted to go for. So
yeah,
it's better sometimes just to put some space in between and fully digest what has actually happened to you.
And not that we didn't, like, as we thought of things, you know, we share a lyric journal where we can collaborate and we just put whatever's in our head at the time. And certainly throughout this whole year and a half, we've done a little bit of that. Now it's a matter of going back through there and reading what we put down in the moment and turning it into a fully formed thought.
If you take me for a fool, I can see right through you. Oh, everything you do. You got your
let's do Walk Away. I mean, it's, you know, it's anthemic. It's telling them off.
Yeah, this song is Yeah, it's a song for the haters, I guess. It feels like the I've been called worse by better. I don't know. I'm just like, I've been bullied, you know, at times in my life growing up, and I don't know. There's like a little bit of a, sometimes a feeling of something to prove, but also just like, whatever, like, I'm just gonna do my own thing, and you're just gonna have to deal with it, kind of a thing.
It's really satisfying sometimes to say, talk to the hand, you know?
Yeah, and like, it's really about saying goodbye to toxic people in your life or toxic situations, and just nothing wrong with just walking away. And sometimes that's the best thing that you can do, right? Because you're not going to change the other person's mind or their point of view. And you can continue to stay in that field of negative energy, or you can just, you know, walk away, I guess. If you want me to stay, it's tight lines gotta change. Oh, I'm gonna take the next train
back to some better place. There's an instrumental, and instrumentals are not songs, but they bring their own kind of satisfaction.
The darkness is delicate and wild.
Like a lot of things, it just kind of started as something that I would just play while I was, you know, just whatever, hanging out and noodling around. And I live near a small lake, and so there's just tons of frogs and toads and lots of wonderful noise happening all the time. And we had the idea to record some of those toads and put them on the album somewhere. And this song seemed to fit perfectly.
Well, were you kind of inspired by the toads, though?
I built that song to kind of represent what I was hearing when I would walk around the lake and hear these toads and the cicadas and everything just kind of starting low and getting louder and louder and louder until it seemed like it was just so loud and so chaotic. And then just immediately kind of subsiding. And
so it's a toad-rich song.
Yeah, yes, very toad-rich.
We did call it the toad song before we titled it.
Karen Bridges and Clint Thompson are the duo Stone and Snow with their latest album, We Were Made for These Times. There will be a vinyl release show in Bloomington in December. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.